A large square stone plinth has the name 20th Century Fox stacked up upon it. Powerful searchlights around it pan up into the dark night sky. Presents a Mel Brooks film. This film is dedicated to the master of suspense, Alfred Hitchcock. A TWA passenger jet flies high above the clouds in a clear blue sky.
Ladies and gentlemen, the captain has turned on the no smoking sign. Please extinguish all smoking materials. Make sure your seats are in the upright position and your seat belts fastened in preparation for our arrival at Los Angeles International Airport.
The plane's landing gear lowers. The film's title, High Anxiety, appears over the footage. The following titles read, starring Mel Brooks and Madeline Kahn. Passengers on the plane stare excitedly from the windows. As the camera moves along the windows, it comes to a man whose face is contorted with fear and panic. The names Cloris Leachman and Harvey Korman are displayed as the plane approaches the runway. Also starring Ron Carey, Howard Morris, Dick Van Patten. The plane touches down and heads to the terminal building. A list of names reads Jack Riley, Charlie Callas, Ron Clark, Rudy DeLuca, and Barry Levinson. Two further lists name actors with minor roles in the film. The no smoking and fasten seatbelt signs are turned off in the plane as the huge engines gradually spin to a stop. A mobile staircase is brought to the cabin door, and when in position, the flight attendant lets the passengers off.
Bye-bye now. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Take care. Oh, now watch your step there. Okay. Goodbye. Bye-bye. Thank you.
A plump blonde woman holding a rolled-up umbrella beside her head pushes her way through the people waiting in the arrivals lounge and runs towards the frightened man from the plane. He shields himself with his briefcase.
No!
She greets the man behind him. The nervous man composes himself and makes his way through the arrivals lounge until a tall man in a raincoat gets up from his seat and stops him.
Sir, just a moment, please, sir.
Yes.
Sir, if you'll just come with me, please.
Huh? What is this all about?
Sir, it'll be explained in due time. If you'll just follow me, sir, please.
Well, you've obviously made some kind of a mistake.
Sir, we can clear this up in no time. If you'll just follow me, please, sir.
It'll be a simple marrying my superiors, so we'll just like to talk to you, sir. I certainly hope there's an explanation for all this. I'm really in the dark.
This way, sir, please.
In the toilet?
The tall man removes his coat. Underneath, he's naked.
Listen, I demand an explanation.
How about this?
Oh, my God.
You find me attractive?
You're not a cop.
They wouldn't take me.
Excuse me, I have to run now.
Why? Don't run away from your feelings.
Wait,
where are you going? Don't be so gauche, we're all doing it!
The nervous passenger rides down a busy escalator, clutching his briefcase in one hand and with his coat folded over his other arm. A large information board updates details on the flights displayed. The passengers file past a big colourful children's painting of the airport stuck to the wall of a long white tiled walkway that takes them to the baggage reclaim area. A large brown trunk with several travel stickers on the lid drops from the conveyor belt onto the carousel. Passengers quickly pick up their luggage as it arrives in front of them. The nervous traveller leaves the building and stands outside gazing up into the sky. The automatic doors close behind him.
What a dramatic airport!
Produced and directed by Mel Brooks.
Dr. Thorndike? Dr. Richard H. Thorndike?
Yes.
Hold it!
A diminutive man wearing a chauffeur's cap photographs the nervous man, Dr. Richard Thorndike. He captures him in a selection of poses and with a variety of facial expressions. Richard stands on top of his brown trunk and is pictured leaping from it.
Who are you?
Oh, I'm Brophy. I work at the Institute. I came to pick you up. I'm going to be your driver and sidekick.
Oh, how do you do? Why the picture taking?
Oh, I love to take pictures. I'm very photogenic. I even developed them myself. I have my own dark room. Please hold the camera, Doc. I'll get the trunk.
Oh, fabulous.
Brophy struggles to lift the large trunk.
I got it. I got it.
Where's the car?
Over there, Doc.
Would you mind opening the trunk?
I'll open the trunk.
I'll save us a little time.
Okay. You got it. There we go.
Richard loads the trunk into the car's boot.
Gee, Doc, I sure am glad you're taking over as the new head of the asylum. We haven't had a real chief since Dr. Ashley died.
Well, I just hope I do as good a job as Ashley did. He was a brilliant psychiatric innovator.
Yeah, innovator. Boy, when it was announced that you were going to take over, Dr. Montague blew his top. Between me, you, and the steering wheel, I guess Montague figured he had the job neatly tucked away in his back pocket, if you get my drift.
Is that so?
And then, from out of the blue, they go and get you, a professor from Harvard University. No offense.
None taken.
Boy, I tell you, it was a real shock to everybody when Ashley died. The guy was in tip-top shape.
Well, one can never predict a heart attack.
Heart attack? Huh! Don't make me laugh.
Brophy, what are you saying?
If you ask me, I think Dr. Ashley was a victim of foul play.
Richard looks startled and glances furtively around in the back seat of the limousine. He then spots a bus passing them. It has Los Angeles Symphony Orchestra written along the side. Inside, the musicians are playing their instruments. Relieved, Richard puffs out his cheeks and holds a hand to his chest.
Foul play. Brophy, I think your imagination is getting the best of you. Let's not forget that you are working in a psychiatric institution which is conducive to fantasy.
Well, maybe I'm wrong. Hey, I know I'm right.
Waves gently wash into a small sandy cove with sheer cliffs at the rear. A stone archway over iron gates is inscribed with the Psychoneurotic Institute for the Very, Very Nervous. Brophy stops the car and pushes a button on the entry phone.
Brophy here with the new head shrink!
Richard closes his eyes and gently shakes his head. The gates open and Brophy drives in. He takes the car around a large courtyard with immaculately maintained gardens in the centre. Nurses escort patients in the tranquil grounds. Long flights of stone steps lead up to a huge white-painted building with a red-tiled roof. The car stops at the entrance to another imposing building. A man hurries down the steps to meet it.
Dr. Thorndike, I am simply delighted to meet you in person. I've read everything that you've ever written on psychiatry, your lectures, your monographs, your books. I am absolutely thrilled that you are going to take over the Institute.
Well, thank you,
Wentworth, Dr. Philip Wentworth.
Philip Wentworth, a pleasure.
I've been with the Institute for 2 years now, and I just know that things are going to change for the better now that you're here. You see, ever since Dr. Ashley died, things have been happening here that are very strange.
Wentworth! The eminent Dr. Thorndike. It's a great day here at the Institute for the Very, Very Nervous. May I say that we've been looking forward with much anticipation to your arrival. Oh, allow me to introduce myself. I am Dr. Charles Montague. I was in charge here until you showed up.
Ahem!
Oh, allow me to introduce Nurse Diesel, my right-hand man, woman.
Dr. Thorndike, how do you do? Charlotte Diesel. I have left a complete medical file of everyone in the Institute here in your room. I'm sure you'll want to rest a bit and freshen up before you meet the rest of the staff. Dinner is served promptly at 8 in the private dining room. Those who are tardy do not get fruit cup.
She glances up at Montague, then turns smartly on her heels and strides away.
Well, Dr. Thorndike, may I say...
Charles!
Goodbye.
Do you see what I mean? What I'm trying to tell
my
you
breath.
Is...
Goodbye.
Nurse Diesel calls both men inside. Brophy lifts the trunk out of the car.
I got it! I ain't got it!
Richard is in his room unpacking. He carefully places some books onto a shelf in a dark wood cabinet.
Come in!
A small grey-haired man at the door.
Thorndike, my Richard!
Professor Little Old Man!
Lil Olman. Nobody gets it right. Lil Olman. Oh, Richard.
Professor.
My best pupil, my best student which I ever had. Oh. Yeah. A patient comes to you. He is suffering from Belden's hysteria. He has a seizure right in your office. What do you give him?
2 cc's of aqueous thorazine coupled with 1 cc of somadizine.
Good. And the most important thing?
Never take a personal check.
My boy, that's my good pupil.
Yeah. Oh, Professor, it's so good to see you. Please sit down. Let's talk.
Oh, to sit, yeah.
Richard, I am so proud of you. So proud, my boy. Yeah. Head of your class at Johns Hopkins. Associate professor at Dartmouth. Full professor at Harvard. Winner of the Nobel Prize. And now, the head of the most prestigious psychiatric institute on the West Coast. I'm sorry, excuse me. When you get old, you get very emotional. Oh, I blew too fast.
Here, Professor, it's a tissue.
Oh, thank you, James. Thank you, James, to you.
Professor?
Yeah?
I had no idea you were working here.
Working? Huh? Working. Working is a big word. I'm a consultant. It's a fancy title for a part-time job. I come in 2 hours a day. I don't bother them. They don't bother me. Your predecessor, Dr. Ashley, hired me. It is a shame he died so all of a sudden. He was going to make some very big changes around here, and then... Yo, did you see your view outside? Oh, it is spectacular.
I've been meaning to, but I've been so busy unpacking, I haven't had a chance.
You will unpack another time? Come, Richard, I insist. You come and see right now.
Well, if you insist.
Come, Richard, this will be a treat for you. Come, yeah? Here. Is this not the perfect time of the day? Look, yeah?
Very
here,
nice.
Come over here. Here, you can see better.
Oh, it's
come, yeah.
Beautiful.
Come here to the edge and you can look down. Look down.
Richard's face is frozen with fear as he looks down at the waves crashing onto the rocks far below the balcony. He's shown falling into a bottomless spinning spiral.
Richard!
Richard!
You still got it?
That's probably the excitement and tension of taking over this new post. I'm sure it'll pass.
Bullshit! These things do not let go. High anxiety can be a very dangerous enemy. If left unchecked, it could cost you your life!
They both inexplicably look up at the ceiling.
Tomorrow. First thing tomorrow, we have our first session of psychoanalysis. Oh, my boy, I have not had you on the couch for a long time. My boy, I promise, we will beat this thing. Goodbye.
But, Professor, is it really Nessa?
It is Nessa. I know what is Nessa. Don't tell me what's Nessa. I tell you what's Nessa.
From outside, the camera slowly moves towards a pair of French doors. Seen through the small panes of glass is the dining room. Richard and the other members of staff are being served at the table. The camera glides silently towards one of the small panes of glass. The diners turn around and look in astonishment as it smashes through the glass. It then slowly retreats.
As I was saying, it came to my attention that just before Dr. Ashley's untimely death, he was planning to make some very big changes here at the Institute. Do any of you know specifically what those changes might be?
Well, for one thing, he wanted to change...
The drapes. He wanted to change the drapes in the psychotic game room.
That was the extent of the big change, the drapes?
Oh, yes. Dr. Ashley felt that color has a great deal to do with the well-being of the emotionally disturbed.
Well, to some extent, that is true, I imagine.
Nurse Diesel glances at her wristwatch. She rings a crystal bell. A servant hurries to the table. She gestures with a nod of her head for him to remove the fruit cup from the vacant space next to her. Richard watches as it's carried away. Montague bounds down the stairs and into the dining room. He sits down next to Nurse Diesel, then flicks open his napkin. He quickly wipes a small silver spoon from his place setting, and then attempts to scoop up the fruit from the missing cup. Realising it's gone, he looks at his watch.
Only 30 seconds late. You're so strict.
Nurse Diesel digs into her fruit and offers the spoon up to Montague. As he leans forward, she retracts it and slurps the fruit into her mouth. One of the diners gets to his feet, holding a glass of wine in his hand.
Gentlemen, and Nurse Diesel, may I propose a toast to our new leader, Dr. Richard H. Thorndike. Long may he reign.
I thank you.
The other diners stand up and raise their glasses. Nurse Diesel scowls and doesn't drink her wine. Later, Montague sits swilling brandy in a glass.
Yes, that's an excellent brandy. You can tell just by sniffing the aroma. It's much better than the brandy we used to have.
Dr. Montague, I'm curious, what exactly is the rate of patient recovery here at the Institute?
The rate of patient recovery? I'll have that for you in a moment.
Montague takes a calculator from his jacket and taps feverishly on the buttons.
Once in a blue moon.
Once in a blue moon.
Dr. Thorndike, unfortunately, the rate of recovery in the classroom is much higher than it is in real life. We're dealing with sick people here, you understand? Dangerously sick people!
Nurse Diesel drives a fork through Montague's cuff and into the tabletop.
Dr. Thorndike, will you be attending the annual psychiatric convention in San Francisco next week?
I think someone should attend, don't you? I'd be delighted to have the honor.
Sure you'll have a nice time.
Oh, thank you.
Back in his room, Richard rigorously cleans his teeth.
Up and down, up and down, side, 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 in and out. In and out, side, 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 side. Up and down, side, 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 side. In and out, side, 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 side.
He takes a sip from a glass of water. A large rock crashes through the bathroom window.
Oh my God.
He examines the rock and finds a sheet of paper tied to it. He takes it off and unfolds it.
Welcome, the violent ward.
Doc, is everything all right?
Somebody just threw an enormous rock through my window.
Jeez.
Brophy looks down at the rock on the floor.
A guy like that should be put away. Look at the size of this thing. Here, let me get rid of it for you. I got it. I got it. I got it. I got it. I got it.
Brophy, get it tomorrow.
Yeah.
What was that?
I don't know. I don't know.
Come on.
Brophy follows Richard out into the corridor.
It's coming from Nurse Diesel's room.
Is everything all right in there? Nurse Diesel, are you all right?
She opens the door in a white hooded robe.
Yes.
We heard some weird noises emanating from your room. We were worried.
Weird noises. It was the TV. Sorry it disturbed you. I've turned it down. Is there anything else? It is rather late.
No. We were concerned. Good night.
Good night. Good night.
Good night.
The TV. Well, you could have fooled me.
Yeah, the TV. It was probably the TV. Probably the TV.
Good night.
There was no TV.
Nurse Diesel goes back into her room. In front of the mirror, she pulls down her hood and puts on a black peaked cap. She then takes off the robe. Underneath, she wears black leather knee-high boots with matching shorts and a grey silk shirt with badges reading Division of Correction. She opens the wardrobe doors. Inside, Montague is chained and handcuffed to the hanging rail.
Who was it?
It was Thorndike. You're making too much noise.
I can't help it. You're hurting me. You're going too hard tonight.
Oh, get off it. I know you better than you know yourself. You live for bondage and discipline.
Too much bondage, too much bondage. Not enough discipline.
You want discipline? I'll give you discipline.
She smacks him on the bottom.
Yes! Yes, I'm sorry! Yes! Charlotte, it's so good! Mommy!
A bright light glints into Richard's office from a window of a nearby building. He sits at his desk trying to read a file. The light distracts him, and he uses the file to shield his eyes.
Yes?
Dr. Thorndike, Dr. Montague, I'm here to see you.
Please take your hand away from your nose and say that again.
Dr. Montague is here to see you.
Oh, thank you. Send him right in.
Montague enters the office wearing a black and white striped shirt and a black bow tie.
Oh, Dr. Montague, thank you for coming.
I'm so sorry I'm late. It took longer than I anticipated to complete my rounds this morning.
Please have a seat.
Thank you.
He winces as he sits down.
Dr. Montague, I'm a little disturbed.
Yes, Dr. Thorndike?
I've been going over some of these case histories, and every once in a while I come across a patient who behaves in a rational and normal manner. Zachary Cartwright III, for instance. It seems his family is paying $12,000 a month to the Institute, and according to this file, he should have been released months ago.
Well, these case histories are really so sketchy. They hardly draw a true picture of the patient's psychosis. Cartwright is a perfect example. One moment he can be perfectly rational and lucid. The next, he's a living Looney Tune.
Do you mind terribly if we examine it together? He's just outside my door.
Mind? Why should I mind? After all, you're in charge here. You can examine anyone you want.
Montague snaps the pencil in his hands.
Please send Mr. Cartwright in. Thank you. Hello, Mr. Cartwright. Have a seat. You know Dr. Montague, don't you?
Hello, Dr. Montague.
Hello, Zach.
Montague gets up. Mr. Cartwright sits in his chair and is joined by Richard.
Tell me, Mr. Cartwright, do you know why you're here at the Institute?
Yes, I was brought in 2 years ago. I was suffering from nervous exhaustion. I used to get sharp pains in my neck and dreamt about werewolves.
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 And in the 2 years that you've been here, do you feel you've made any progress?
Oh, I never get those pains anymore. And it's been 6 months since I had a dream about a werewolf.
6 months since you had your last dream about a werewolf. Tell me, Mr. Cartwright, frankly, if you were returned to the community today, do you think you could function in a happy, healthy, normal, and productive manner?
Oh, I think so. I feel pretty good.
What is it? What's the matter? What's wrong?
That pain just came back.
You see how unpredictable he is.
Please, help me get him to the couch. Here. Here, sit right here, Mr. Cartwright. Put your head back. Breathe deeply. Try to relax.
Easy. I'll try.
This pain that you haven't experienced in such a long time has suddenly reappeared for no apparent reason.
I don't know what it is.
This is such a strange experience.
I think the pain is going away now.
Oh, good. Breathe deeply.
I feel perfectly fine.
Montague fires another paperclip at Zack's neck.
Cartwright, is it the same pain?
Yes.
Here, let me
yes.
In.
Yes.
Let me examine you.
No, no.
I just wanted to help you. Cartwright, I don't understand this.
I don't understand it either, Doctor.
Relax. Just take it easy. Let me look.
Unseen by Richard, Montague puts vampire fangs in his mouth and dangles over Zack.
Take it easy.
Go away.
Richard crawls across the floor after Zack. Montague follows behind, intimidating him with the fangs. Two orderlies enter the office and apprehend Zack.
Get his feet.
Montague removes the fangs and waves to Zack as he's taken away.
Take him back to his room. Give him a sedative. Make it a big one. Sad. I've never seen anything quite like that. And he was doing so well.
I know. It is sad. Tears your heart apart.
Yes. Oh. There's that flashing again.
Flashing?
Yes, it started this morning, and here it is again. It seems to be coming from somewhere up there.
Yes, the north wing. Room 35, I'd say.
It stopped. Who's in that room?
A patient named Brisbane.
Brisbane. Arthur Brisbane? The industrialist?
Yes, I think that's the one.
How long has he been here?
Oh, about 18 months.
18 months? I didn't come across his name in the files.
Oh, well, must be an oversight.
I'd like to meet him.
Oh, but he's hopeless. You don't want to meet him.
I'd like to meet him right after lunch.
All right. As you wish. I'll arrange it for you.
Montague picks up the phone on the desk.
Nurse Diesel, Dr. Montague here. Dr. Thorndike would like to meet Arthur Brisbane right after lunch. Good. Uye one atwe ute ude. Edit gay? Everything will be taken care of.
There it goes again.
The brilliant light from the north wing shines through the window again. Richard is shown falling into the spinning spiral. He wakes in Professor Lilleman's office.
Falling! Mama! Falling!
Fight it, Thorndike! Fight it! You must fight it! Do you hear me? Fight your fears! The only way to overcome high anxiety is to fight it!
Fight!
Fight it!
He punches the professor on the chin.
You want a fight, huh?
All right. I give you a fight, so don't forget. I give you some fight. Come on, show me your stuff. Show me your good stuff, huh? All right, I give you.
Lilleman repeatedly punches Richard in the face.
Come on, get up, you little punk. Stand up and fight. Come on, you little...
Montague walks in on them.
Professor, what are you doing? This is unseemly behavior. What are you doing? Stop.
Montague takes off his jacket and dances around the two fighting men.
I give you...
All right, come on, boys. We came to see a fight, not a dance. Let's go, mix it.
Montague taps a pipe on the rim of a metal ashtray. The two men break and sit down in armchairs.
Professor, what happened here?
Well, I put him under hypnosis. He will be out very soon. You see, we had been running a series of analytic sessions to try to help him overcome a very serious illness known as high anxiety.
High anxiety?
Yeah. Do
you mean to say that Dr. Richard Thorndike, one of the world's greatest psychiatric authorities,
is suffering from high anxiety.
Yeah, yeah. But you would not breathe a word of this to anyone, would you?
Professor.
Yeah?
May I remind you that I am also a professional? I am shocked that you would think I'd say a word about this.
Montague grabs his jacket and leaves.
Hey, everybody. Guess who has high anxiety?
Dismayed, Lilleman shakes his head. He then goes over to Richard.
Richard?
Falling. Mama, falling. Mama, falling.
Richard, I'm going to bring you out. I'm going to bring you out. I bring you out. Richard?
Richard, oh, my boy, Richard.
Professor?
Yeah.
You'll never believe what I just went through.
Yeah, I
was. It was horrible.
I believe.
But there will be no more sessions for a while, eh? Yeah? So, go get yourself a little rest, yeah, my boy?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Professor.
Yeah, I'll be the same.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Lilleman flops onto a chair and picks up his notebook.
So let us see here. Mama, I am falling. Ah. Oh.
Montague escorts Richard to the North Wing Violent Ward.
Norton, this is our new chief, Dr. Thorndike. He would like to see Mr. Brisbane.
Certainly.
Norton, the orderly, opens the sturdy steel door. Half of his neatly trimmed moustache is missing.
It's a pleasure to meet you, Dr. Thorndike.
Pleasure to meet you, Norton. Forgive me for prying. What happened to your moustache?
As you know, we get some very violent patients in this wing. Well, last week, I guess I wasn't on my toes, and one of them reached out and ripped off half of my moustache.
That must have been awful.
You'll never know the pain.
It can get quite dicey up here at times. Well, shall we go?
Follow me.
Hey, Norton! You missing something?
The patient wears Norton's missing moustache. Norton unlocks a cell door. A label on it reads A. Brisbane. They go inside. In one corner, a man wearing a sleep suit and a collar around his neck lies curled up in a dog basket.
That's Arthur Brisbane, the industrialist?
Montague nods.
No! Down, Brisbane! Down! Bad, Brisbane! Bad. Sit up. That is. All right.
Don't worry, he won't bite. Just let him smell you. He thinks he's a Cocker Spaniel.
Cocker Spaniel. Here we go. Very good. I've never seen anything. Down! Sit! Down! Hey! Stay! This is amazing. It's the most complex psychic phenomenon I've ever witnessed. I once read a paper when I was in college about this. I think it was Otto Rank. Might have been Kraft Ebbing. About a woman in Vienna, Mrs. Nussbaum, who thought that she was an animal of some kind, an antelope.
What the hell are you? No! Stop that! Stop it! Bad, Brisbane! We don't do that with strangers! Back off! You! Get his leash, Norton!
Norton drags Brisbane back to his basket and attaches a leash to his collar.
Extraordinary. How could a creature like that have the wherewithal to try to contact me by flashing a mirror?
Well, cockers are very bright, you know.
That's true. That's very true.
Norton ties the leash up and turns off the lights as he leaves the cell. Dr. Wentworth is in Nurse Diesel's office.
I don't understand. I can't go on. I swear to God, I won't say a word, but I can't take it any longer.
You're just as much a part of this as the rest of us. No one's quitting. Do you hear me? No one.
But I can't sleep at night. What we're doing is wrong. Don't you understand it's wrong? I've got to get out of here. I'm trapped. I feel like I'm caught in a web.
Why are you fools? Windows open.
She looks outside. Brophy is polishing the car. She closes the window.
All right. Perhaps
I have been too harsh. You are free to leave the Institute this evening.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Nurse Diesel. And I promise I won't say anything to anyone. Thank you.
I know you won't. I know you won't.
In torrential rain, Wentworth drives his car along a dark, deserted country road. He squints his eyes as the lights of oncoming traffic dazzle him. He looks in the rearview mirror and spots a truck now close behind him. The truck showers his car in water as it passes. He struggles to see as he's dazzled by more oncoming traffic. He switches on the car's radio. His eyes dart around inside the car. He then tries to retune the radio and turn down the volume, but the control knobs have no effect. He clasps his hands over his ears. The car swerves across the rain-soaked road and off into a ditch. Wentworth turns off the engine. He then twists the knobs on the radio, pulling them both off. He hits the buttons with his hand, then raises his foot to the dashboard and kicks at the radio. He eventually rocks back in his seat, screaming with his hands held over his ears. He turns the window winder, it comes away in his hand, he tries the door handle, and that too falls off. He attempts to get out of the passenger door, but finds it locked. He then lays across the front seats and pushes the driver's door window glass with his feet. Quickly weakens and lays slumped across the front seat with a small trickle of blood running down from his ear. Back at the Institute, Brophy runs down the steps carrying luggage. Richard stands by the car talking with Montague and Nurse Diesel.
Busted eardrums. That's a very strange symptom for a cerebral hemorrhage.
According to the coroner's report, Wentworth did suffer from a cerebral hemorrhage.
I can't go to San Francisco at a time like this.
Dr. Thorndike, there's nothing you can do. If we receive any additional information about Wentworth, we'll call you. It's important that you attend the psychiatric convention. Remember, you are representing the Institute.
Yes, enjoy yourself, for God's sakes. Get your mind off the Wentworth murder. Accident. Have a good time.
Well, I did work long and hard on that speech. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm going. Mm-hmm. You've convinced me. Mm-hmm. Brophy!
I'm just looking for my camera. I want to get one last shot.
No.
Please, Brophy, not now.
Hold it. Okay, Doc, let's hit the road.
Well, see you in 3 days.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Enjoy yourself.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Mm-hmm. I think you punctured something with that last shot. You do everything too hard. Too hard.
Come to my room right after dinner.
No, not tonight. I'm too tired. I think I'm going to turn in early.
I'll let you wear my underwear.
I'll be there.
A ship passes under the Golden Gate Bridge, followed by an exterior view of the Hyatt Regency Hotel. Brophy pulls off the main road and drives up to the hotel's entrance. A banner on the building reads, "Welcome to the American Psychiatric Convention." The doorman brings their luggage to the hotel reception desk.
Thorndike and Brophy.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Richard stands gawping at the glass carriages of the elevators that run up and down inside the building.
Dr. Richard H. Thorndike?
Yes.
All right, sir, very good. Here we go. You're all set.
Wow, talk about margarine.
You and Mr. Brophy are in 1702 and 1703.
Excuse me, I thought I'd specifically requested a room on a lower floor, nothing higher than 3.
We had 201 all set for you, sir, but a Mr. McGuffin called and told us to change it to the 17th floor. I'm sorry, sir, we can't do a thing about it today. We're all booked up.
Oh, come on, Doc. It's only for a couple of nights.
Oh, I guess it'll be all right. Just, I really don't like high places.
Oh, Dennis, would you take Dr. Thorndike to his room, please?
Anything I can get you, sir?
Yes, please. I'd like a newspaper.
Gotcha. Get you one and meet you at the elevators.
Please don't forget. It's rather important.
All right already.
I want to see if there's any mention of Wentworth's death.
Yeah. Oh, Doc, there's the elevators.
He watches them as they glide down to the ground floor.
Come on, Doc.
I'm coming.
In the elevator, Dennis, the bellboy, pushes the closed door button, then selects the 17th floor.
Here we go, straight to the top.
Richard peers nervously down at the ground as the elevator quickly takes them up.
Quite a view, isn't it? Here we are. Top floor, top of the hotel. You can't get any higher. We're pretty high.
We know it. We know we're high. That part we know.
The doors open. Richard staggers out, clutching his stomach.
Excuse me, this way. This way, please. Right around the corner.
Wow. Hey, Doc, look at this. What a view. This is spectacular. I can see it from here. It's very nice. Very nice indeed. Very nice.
Richard shuffles along with his back firmly pressed to the wall. A cleaner's trolley hits him, knocking him to the railing. Brophy grabs him and pulls him away, then gently lowers him to the floor.
Are you all right, Doc? Are you all right?
I'm all right. I'm all right, Brophy. I'm all right.
I'm sorry, sir. I didn't know anyone was there.
You fellas want to see your rooms or not? Huh? Well?
Let's get out of here.
Brophy brushes Richard down. They then follow Dennis to the room.
Boy, if you would have gone over, you would have been smashed like corned beef hash. Your brains would have splattered all over the lobby. Your guts would have
Brophy,
been...
Brophy, please.
Right here is 1702. You're in 1703. Here's your key. I'll bring you back in a minute.
Okay. See you later, bro.
Thank you.
Dennis follows Richard into his room with his luggage.
There you go. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anything else I can get you, sir?
Oh, yes, my newspaper. What happened to my newspaper?
Oh, the newsstand didn't have any. I didn't feel like running around a corner. It's a hassle.
I want that newspaper. It's very important.
All right, I'll get your paper.
A hassle. Don't forget!
All right. What's so important about a lousy, crummy newspaper?
Richard frowns quizzically. Meanwhile, back down in the lobby.
Oh, Dennis, Dr. Thorndike in room 1702 just called down to remind you not...
I know! Get the newspaper! Get the newspaper! Get the stinking newspaper!
The receptionist looks curiously at Dennis. Richard goes into his bathroom. He takes off his robe and slippers, then pulls the shower curtain across before turning on the water. He closes his eyes and moves his head under the shower nozzle. He then lathers up some soap and begins to wash himself. Just visible through the steam and the opaque shower curtain, a figure enters the bathroom.
Hello.
Dennis pulls back the shower curtain and stabs Richard with a rolled up newspaper. Dennis leaves. Richard pulls the shower curtain from its rings. The water runs black with the ink from the newspaper lying in the bottom of the bath. Motionless, Richard rests his soaking wet head on the side of the bath.
That kid gets no tip.
Later, Richard is adjusting his tie in front of the mirror.
Who is it? Who is it?
He goes to the door.
It's not the bellboy, is it?
He opens the door ajar. A tall young blonde woman pushes her way in.
Get away from the door.
Who are you?
Get away from me.
Just a second.
Keep quiet, they'll hear you. Don't move. Go inside. Go to your room.
Go to my room.
The drapes! Close the drapes!
The drapes. Close the drapes. Close the drapes.
Close the other one. Get down! Lower!
He crawls on his stomach to get to the pull cord.
Good. Quick, come here.
He shuffles on his knees back over to her.
Get up. Sit down. Not there. Here.
Here?
There.
Now, will you please tell me, who are you and who are they?
A maid enters the room.
Quick, make believe you know me terribly well. Terribly well.
The woman leans over Richard and starts kissing him. The maid looks aghast at them and quickly leaves.
What's your sign?
I'm sorry. It's unlisted.
Boy, you sure blow hot and cold. No offense. Will you please tell me who you are?
My name is Victoria Brisbane. My father is Arthur Brisbane.
You're the Cocker's daughter?
Have you seen my father at the Institute? Is he all right?
He's fine, he's fine. He's coming along just fine. He's very affectionate. He licked me.
He what?
Well, he thinks he's a dog these days.
A dog?
Dog, yes.
Do you mind if I smoke?
Not at all.
I see. A dog. Mm-hmm.
She lights her cigarette with a novelty pistol lighter.
Dr. Thorndike, I assure you, my father is just as sane as I am. 18 months ago, he suffered a nervous breakdown. He went into the Institute for a rest and has been a virtual prisoner there ever since. Frankly, Doctor, I fear for his life.
Miss Brisbane, I assure you, I am a competent psychiatrist. I've met with and examined your father, and I must tell you, in my professional capacity, he is deeply disturbed.
Don't answer it. If they know I'm here with you, they'll harm my father.
Hey, Doc, you're late. They're waiting for you.
I'll be right down. That's Brophy, my driver. He's all right. Miss Brisbane, I'm terribly sorry. I must go now. They're waiting for me.
Don't you believe me? Don't you believe what I'm telling you?
It's not that I don't care. You don't understand. I am the principal speaker at the convention. I must go. I'm very late. Why don't we meet downstairs later at the bar? We'll talk about it then.
Fine. Later at the bar. That's perfect.
Let's go. Here we go. See? There's no one here. There are no enemies. There's nothing to worry about. Here, let me see you to the elevator. Right this way. Nice hotel, isn't it? Kind of high.
Richard shuffles along, pressed against the wall. A man in a black polo neck and a grey suit watches them from the opposite balcony. In the packed conference hall, black and white portrait posters hang at the back of the stage. Each is labelled. The names read Freud, Rank, Young, Adler, and the only woman amongst them, Brothers.
May I have your attention? May I have your attention, please? Fellow members of the American Psychiatric Convention, it is a pleasure and an honor to present the new head of the Psychoneurotic Institute for the very, very nervous. Winner of the Nobel Prize for his works in the use of chemotherapy on severe psychosis. The distinguished Dr. Richard
H. Thorndike.
Richard steps up to the podium.
Thank you, Dr. Colburn. Fellow analysts, psychiatrists, psychologists, and lay people. Today, I would like to discuss some of the lesser-known aspects of psychobiological therapy. 100 years ago, psychology was akin to witchcraft, but some of these great people, these giants behind me, gave us a nice living.
The man in the polo neck talks on a payphone.
I don't know what they said. I only know that they met. What do you want me to do, kill him? If you want me to kill him, I'll kill him. I don't have to kill him, but I'd like to kill him. I kill Ashley Wentworth. Another killing or two would make any difference. It would make me happy. I'd like to kill them both. I think it'd be better if I kill them both. Well, let me kill just one then. Whichever one you want. All right, I'll wait. But the minute you say kill him, I'll kill him. I'll love to kill him. It would give me immense pleasure.
And so, in conclusion, let me reiterate that there are no rules, that each patient is a supreme individual endowed with those qualities that distinguish the human being from the slime from which he emerged. Thank you.
Dr. Coburn, seated in the front row, holds up his hand.
Yes, Dr. Coburn.
Dr. Thorndike, may I ask you a question?
Certainly.
Dr. Thorndike, you mentioned in your address that penis envy should be deemed an antiquated psychiatric concept. Could you expand on that?
Of course. Let us remember that the term penis envy was created in a predominantly male atmosphere.
Excuse me.
And that...
Sorry, I'm late. Forgive me for bringing the kids. I couldn't get a sitter.
Please, have a seat. As I was saying, in a world of predominantly male-oriented psychology, it was only natural to arrive at the term P. Pee-pee envy.
Are you saying there's absolutely no validity to...
Richard gestures to the late arrival's two young girls.
Pee-pee envy.
It has no more validity than if a man envied a woman's... balloons.
Dr. Thorndike, sir, do you feel that the trauma of toilet training has any bearing on the sexual future of the adolescent?
Toilet training. That's a vast area. Let's be more specific. Are we talking about...
He looks at the two girls.
Number one, or cocky duty?
Well, let's say for the sake of argument, cocky duty.
I'd have to say professionally that cocky duty has very little to do with the future sexual development of the adolescent.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Let me backtrack for a second. The female erogenous zone.
You mean the balloons?
Oh, no. Lower, much lower. Where the babies come out of. The woo-woo.
The woo-woo.
Yes, the woo-woo. Perhaps the most significant psychological feminine component known to mankind.
The audience give him a standing ovation. Later, he sits beside the piano in the bar with Victoria Brisbane. The waiter brings their drinks.
Here we are, a B&B and B&B&B.
Thank you.
Dr. Richard H. Thorndike. What does the H stand for?
Harsha.
What?
Harpo. My mother loved the Marx Brothers. She saw all their movies. She named me Harpo.
Harpo. I like it. You know, it's very refreshing. I mean, there are certain names that you just don't hear very often these days. Anyway, here's to Daddy's recovery.
To Daddy's recovery. Feeling better?
Oh, Dr. Thorndike, you will never know how wonderful you've made me feel by allowing me to visit my father at the Institute. I mean, I can't believe it. I'm actually going to see him.
Miss Brisbane, I must warn you. You may be in for quite a shock.
I don't care. I don't care. I just know that if I can see him, if I can speak with him, that everything will be all right.
Hey, it's song time here at the piano bar. That means I lay back and let you come forward and sing a few songs. How about you, sir?
The man declines.
How about you, ma'am?
No? How about you, Doc? How about giving us a tune? Come on.
Me?
Yes.
I don't sing. No, I really don't sing. Not professionally, anyway.
Yeah, come on, Doc. Give us a song.
Please, we'd love it.
Come on, Doc. You can do it.
Go ahead. It'll be fun.
A little tune.
All right. Do you know High Anxiety?
You got it. Is B flat okay?
B flat?
The key.
Oh, the key. Oh, that's fine. Sure, I guess so. But sing it to me?
Mm-hmm.
No, okay. Anytime. High anxiety whenever you're near. High anxiety, it's you that I fear. My heart's afraid to fly, it's crashed before. But then you take my hand, my heart starts to soar. Once more, high anxiety, it's always the same. Ooh, anxiety, it's you that I blame. It's very clear to me, I've got to give in. High anxiety, you win. Hiya, Tex. Where you from?
Cincinnati.
Great town. Love that big red machine. He's up on the linguine. Hello, young lovers, whoever you are. What do I spy? A little grain of rice? Newly married?
This morning.
This morning, folks, and they said it wouldn't last. But then you take my hand, my heart starts to soar. Once more, key change, high anxiety, it's always the same. Hey, anxiety, it's you that I blame. It's very clear to me, I've got to give in. High anxiety. And remember, folks, be good to your parents. They've been good to you. You win.
He coils up the mic cable and hands the microphone back to the pianist. Then he sits down with Victoria.
Jeepers, Richard, that was terrific.
Oh, thank you.
I am so impressed. Have you ever thought of singing professionally?
Oh, no. The big bucks are in psychiatry. I mean, it's so much more emotionally rewarding.
Exactly.
To help people.
Exactly. Would you excuse me for a moment? I'll be right back. I just have to go to the, little girl's room.
Oh, of course.
Excuse me.
There you go.
A picture of her father drops from her bag.
Forgive me for prying, but who is this gentleman?
What are you talking about? That's Daddy.
Are you trying to tell me that this man is Arthur Brisbane, your father?
Of course.
This is not the man I met at the Institute. Something is very, very wrong.
The polo neck assassin watches them from the bar. At the Institute, Montague speaks with Nurse Diesel.
What are we going to do? This is serious. He knows. He's seen the picture. He knows that's not the real Brisbane we showed him.
More coffee, please.
Charlotte, what'll we do? We'll have to kill him. We'll have to let him kill him.
That's all we need now, another killing. Give me a cookie. First Ashley, then Wentworth. We can't kill Thorndike without the police suspecting something.
Pass me the cream, please. But what are we going to do? Supposing he goes to the police?
I've thought of that. He won't go to the police. if he can't go to the police.
I don't understand, Sugar, please. What do you mean if he can't go to the police? Why can't he go to the police?
Because the police will be looking for him.
Why would the police be looking for him?
Because Thorndyke is going to kill somebody.
Oh?
Here, finish your strudel.
At the hotel reception.
Here the keys.
But weren't you and Dr. Thorndyke supposed to check out tomorrow?
I don't know. Early this morning, bang! The doc called and said we gotta get back to the Institute right away. Boy, this joint is really luxurious. I gotta take a few shots of this joint. Do you mind if I do?
Not at all.
You got some joint here. Let me take it now. Oh, I like this joint. What a joint. It's beautiful. It's terrific. It's gorgeous. It's gorgeous. Yeah, that's beautiful. The elevators. Good. Oh, Dr. Thorndyke!
Dr. Thorndyke, I hear you're leaving. What about the seminar this afternoon?
Richard pulls a gun from under his folded coat and shoots the delegate in the chest. Brophy photographs him as he shoots the man again in the forehead. Richard calmly puts the gun under his coat and walks away. The receptionist stands watching open-mouthed. Richard ties his shoelace as he waits for the elevator. When the doors open, the real Dr. Richard Thorndyke steps out.
Dr. Thorndyke?
Yes?
Here's a little present for you.
He hands the gun to Richard.
What is this? Who are you?
The polo neck assassin tears off a rubber mask.
Why are you? Wait! Who are you? What does this mean?
Richard goes into the lobby with a gun in his hand.
That's the man who shot him!
No, wait, you don't understand. This is not my gun. It was, oh my God, man is dead. He shot her, I'm sure. He took off a mask, he took off my face. This was given to me by somebody who looked just like me. This is me's gun, not mine. Gentlemen, don't go for your guns. I'm a psychiatrist. I can help you. We can discuss this. We're rational. No!
Two armed guards chase Richard.
Doc! Why did you do it? Why did you do it?
Richard makes a call from a payphone in a park.
No, I'm all right. I'm fine. I'm just fine. I'm at the Golden Gate Park. Meet me in a half hour. At the north, by northwest corner. Yes, good.
He removes his name badge from his jacket, then walks over to a waste bin and takes a discarded newspaper from it. Nervously glancing back and forth, he sits down on a park bench and opens up the newspaper. He takes another look around, then begins to read the paper. Behind him, a few pigeons flutter down and settle on a metal climbing frame. Richard looks up above, before returning to his paper. Meanwhile, more pigeons land on the nearby climbing frame. Looking a little unsettled, Richard turns round to see the frame filled with a flock of fluttering pigeons. He composes himself and continues to read the paper. A bird dropping splatters over the right shoulder of his dark suit. He slowly turns to look at it and then is hit on the other side. He gets up and starts to slowly walk away. He breaks into a run, covering his head with his hands. As the pigeons give chase, his dark suit is showered in bird droppings. He spots a small store hut in the park and races over towards it. He quickly closes the door and sits down on top of a metal dustbin. A large white dollop of bird dropping lands on the tip of his nose, followed by several more on his jacket. Exasperated, he looks up to see a large square opening in the roof, with pigeons perched all around it. He shakes his head despairingly. A pigeon then lands on it. Later, with his jacket spattered in white bird droppings, he teeters along the street to a same-day dry cleaner's. Customers already in the shop quickly leave. Now with a clean suit, Richard glances at his watch as he paces nervously around in the park. A car with distinctive brown and cream pattern bodywork pulls up. Victoria Brisbane gets out, wearing a trouser suit matching the car's bodywork. Richard hurries down to the street. He looks at her, then glances back at the car as they make their way back into the park.
Richard, the world has gone crazy. I mean, nothing makes any sense anymore. I mean, I don't know what to believe and what not to believe. My life is just all topsy-turvy. I mean, one minute you're singing love songs, and the next minute you're pumping bullets into an innocent man, and then it is not you. It is the other Thorndyke. I mean, how much more can a girl take? I mean, my nerves are cracking. I feel like I'm going to die. I mean, I think I am going to explode.
Vicky, take it easy, darling. Take it easy.
I'm sorry, please forgive me. I'm just so close to my menstrual cycle that I could scream.
Vicky, please. We've got to think. The only way out of this is to prove I didn't commit that murder.
Well, how? Would you look at today's paper? Now, that is you pulling the trigger. That is nobody but you.
Who took this picture? How did they get this picture? Brophy. My buddy Brophy. Hey, wait a minute. I was coming down to the lobby in the elevator at the time of the shooting. Here is the elevator. Here is me. See that little dot?
But that figure is so tiny, it's unrecognizable.
Brophy has the negative. You've got to contact Brophy and have him blow up this negative, enlarge it, and prove that's me in the elevator.
Ooh, he left this morning. He's probably back at the Institute by now.
Richard spots two police officers on patrol. He quickly kisses Vicky. The officers smile and walk on.
How can you get so excited at a time like this? I mean, don't get me wrong. It's not that I'm not titillated or anything. It's just that I don't...
We've got to separate.
Gosh, you're fickle.
We can't stay together. We can't be seen. Listen, go back to your hotel room. Call Brophy. Get him to blow up that negative. I'll call you later.
Back at the Institute, Brophy is on the phone in his dark room while developing enlargements of the picture in the newspaper.
It's coming. Holy Toledo, you're right. There is a figure in the elevator, and I think it's the doc. Oh, this has got to be much, much, much bigger. I got to keep enlarging this thing until we can clearly see the doc's face. Call me in an hour.
Brophy places a large sheet of white card in his enlarger. Later, he examines pictures increasing in size with a magnifying glass. He finally arrives at a giant print covering the entire wall. He backs away from it, holding the magnifying glass up in front of him as he focuses on the elevator. Montague, Nurse Diesel and Norton creep into the room behind him.
That's the doc!
Good work. Very good work, Brophy. Unfortunately, it will never be seen.
We've got to destroy the negative. Give us the negative, Brophy.
You'll never get it. Never, never, do you hear me? You'll never get this. I'd rather die first.
Norton?
Norton points a gun at Brophy's head.
Here.
You fool. That negative has been on the front page of every newspaper in San Francisco. They can enlarge it as well.
You're right. I never thought of that. We've got to think. I've got it! Norton, we have to buy every single newspaper in San Francisco. We'll need about $10,000 worth of change. The first thing I want you to do is get a truck. A big truck. Then you go around to all the newspapers, all the stands, and you put the paper out. Perhaps it's not a good idea.
It sucks. Norton, take our good friend, Mr. Brophy here, to the North Wing.
Norton takes Brophy away. Nurse Diesel perches herself on Montague's lap.
You see, darling, it's not the negative that has to be destroyed. It's Dr. Richard Thorndike. I think we'd better call our friend in San Francisco with a tin teeth.
Oh, I get so hot when you're bad.
Montague carries Nurse Diesel away in his arms. The polar neck assassin gets a call on his pager. The assassin goes to a phone booth and takes the phone out of the hands of a small elderly man.
Excuse me.
He shoves the old man against the glass while he makes his call.
Diesel here.
Hello, I have a collect call from San Francisco.
Yes, I'll accept the charges.
Hello, it's me. What do you want?
Hello, Braces. I have a little present for you. You may kill Thorndike.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate this. I really do. Thank you.
The old man's face is pressed to the glass. The assassin puts the phone down and breathes deeply.
Life is good.
Richard emerges from behind a brick tower on a pier under the Golden Gate Bridge. He runs to a phone booth, goes inside and makes a call. A photo frame by the ringing phone has pictures of Vicky and her father inside it. Meanwhile, the assassin smashes his fist through the glass of the phone booth.
Hello?
Vicky listens as he strangles Richard with the phone cord.
Listen, mister, I don't go for this sort of thing.
Vicky sits on her bed, listening to the groaning on the line.
I know a lot of the other girls are turned on by these sort of kinky phone calls, but I really couldn't care less. How did you, get my room number? I am not going to listen to any more of this. I mean, I've had just about enough. What are you wearing? Jeans? You're wearing jeans? I bet they're tight.
A large triangular shard of glass protrudes dangerously upwards in the frame of the booth. Richard yanks on the cord, impaling the assassin onto it.
God!
You are an animal!
Vicky! Victoria!
It's me, Richard!
Richard! Richard! Richard! No, Richard! Richard! I knew, no, I knew it was you! I knew it was you all the time. I just went along with it. I laughed. Did you laugh?
Victoria! I just killed a man.
Another one? Listen, Richard, you have got to get a grip on yourself.
No, you don't understand. I killed the man who killed a man in the lobby. And never mind. Did you reach Brophy?
I did, and he said that there was a figure in the elevator and that it might be you, and he was going to keep enlarging it until he was absolutely certain. And then I waited for 1 hour and called back.
And?
And they said that he wasn't there.
Oh, my God, they know. They know everything. They've got Brophy. They've got the picture.
Well, what are we going to do? I mean, how are we going to prove that you're innocent?
We've got to get back to the Institute. We've got to find your father. We must expose Diesel and Montague for what they are.
Yes, but how are we going to get out of town? I mean, the police are absolutely all over the place.
Go to the Salvation Army.
The Salvation Army? Are they good at this sort of thing?
No. Go to the Salvation Army and get...
In the darkness on the side of a building, the words San Francisco International Airport glow in an amber light. Inside, a sign shows a flight departing for Los Angeles at 10 o'clock. Police officers patrol the departure lounge carrying photographs of Dr. Richard Thorndike. A couple wearing scruffy clothes and mismatched shoes, carrying bags of groceries, make their way to the departure gate.
What is it?
I don't think I can go through with this. I'm sorry. I just... Look at this clothing. What makes you think we're actually going to sneak by these people?
Victoria, I tell you, if we do it just the way we rehearsed it, it will work. Remember, we're not sneaking by. We have to be loud and annoying. If you're loud and annoying, psychologically, people don't notice you. Come on, we can do it. Loud and annoying.
They walk towards the police officers.
Hey, come on, you take this. I can't count on this no more.
Celery you had to buy in San Francisco. You couldn't get it by the market near our house where we live.
Excuse me? I bought a celery in case on the plane they wanted to serve you a Bloody Mary.
A Bloody Mary? Well, missus, I don't like the Bloody Mary they serve on the plane. No, sir. It's too burning. They don't even put tomato juice. They put in Snappy Peppy. Murray Weintraub, remember Murray Weintraub? Morning, noon, and night. Murray Weintraub drank the Bloody Mary with the peppy, with the snappy. You know where he is now? Mouth and dead from that.
Murray Weintraub is not dead. Murray Weintraub is alive.
No.
Morris Turtletop. Morris Turtletop you're talking about, the one from Great Neck that walks sideways like this.
Oh, no, sir. No, sir. Morris Turtletop didn't walk like that. Morris Turtletop, to my memory, walked just like this. Way, a little irregular. Way, couldn't help himself. Come on, let's get out of here. Don't push. You're not
Sir,
to push,
please
baby.
Put your bags right up here.
What?
Please put your bags right up here.
Why do I have to put the bag there? What do you need the bags for?
We have to x-ray them, sir.
You have to x-ray here. You want to x-ray the celery? What do you think, for smuggling dope into celery? The celery's not for dope, it's for dip.
Sir, there are others waiting. Will you please just step through?
Let them wait. All right, go ahead. You go. Come on.
I can't. I'm scared.
For God's sake, go through already.
Wait a minute, is this one of those blowers what blows up the skirt, gives everybody a free show?
Take a chance. Go through, don't make trouble in the airport. Okay.
Vicky shuffles through the metal detector.
Okay, come on, Sam, come on.
All right, here I go, folks, here I go.
Sam!
She spots the gun tucked in his waistband.
What?
Well, here I go.
He sets off the alarm on the metal detector.
What is this, a game show? What did I win, a Pinto?
I'm sorry, sir, we're going to have to search you.
Please, sir, what did I do? What's my crime?
You beeped.
I beeped. Take me away. Take me back to Russia. Put me in irons.
No.
I beeped. The mad beeper is loose. Take away the beeper.
Take me away.
It's all right.
Please go.
Thank you.
Richard, you were absolutely brilliant.
You were wonderful yourself. Come on.
Late at night, under the cover of darkness, Richard and Victoria climb over a balcony at the Institute. They climb through a window into an office. They head towards a desk. The chair behind it has its back to them.
Professor Lilloman? Professor?
Richard spins the chair around. The professor sits with his eyes and mouth wide open.
Oh, my God, he's dead.
Dead? Who's dead? Somebody died?
Oh. Gee, Professor, we thought you were dead.
Oh, that's... I sleep that way. It scares the hell out of everyone.
Professor, have you seen my father?
Your father? Who are you?
Forgive me, Professor. This is Victoria Brisbane. Her father is Arthur Brisbane.
Oh, this is the Cocker's daughter?
Yes.
Yeah. How do you do? I'm sorry for you.
Professor, please, Brophy. We are looking for Brophy. It's very important that we find Brophy.
Brophy. Well, I'm sorry to have to tell you, but Brophy was taken to the North Wing.
What?
Well, according to Montague, the poor chap had a mental breakdown.
Mental breakdown?
Yeah.
Brophy's not smart enough to have a mental breakdown. The North Wing. Come on, we've got to go.
You wait, I go with you. Perhaps I can help, yeah?
Okay, come on, hurry.
They enter the North Wing. The long corridor has a polished tiled floor with rows of cell doors on each side. Richard gestures them to a cell. Inside, Brophy is tied to a chair with tape across his mouth.
Brophy! Brophy, have you seen Brisbane? Where is Brisbane?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Where is he?
They took him to... Norton! Norton's taken him to the tower.
Oh, my God!
They drugged him. They're going to throw him off and make it look like suicide.
Dad!
Come on, let's go.
Come.
The tower sits precariously at the edge of a rocky cliff overlooking the sea. A light glimmers from the vaulted arches at the top. They all enter the tower from a small door at the bottom. Norton hauls the limp body of Arthur Brisbane up the stairs.
Richard! Do something!
I'll try.
Richard climbs the first few steps, then stops.
I can't!
He suffers from high anxiety. It strikes 1 out of 7.
Don't worry, Miss Brisbane. I'll stop him.
I go too. Oh, God, I feel like such a...
Coward.
Yeah.
The professor falters on the stairs while Brophy catches up with Norton.
I can't go on. I got him.
I ain't got him.
Norton kicks Brophy in the head.
Where can we go? What can we do?
Oh, God, I've got to save him.
No! He'll kill you. I'm gonna go up.
With his back to the wall, Richard cautiously climbs the stairs. He passes Brophy and the professor on his way up. He takes the gun from his waistband. A clap of thunder scares him. He grabs a stair post and drops the gun. It tumbles down to the bottom. Norton steps on a rotten stair tread. It buckles but holds as he drags Brisbane to the top. Richard follows behind him. He feels the rotten stair tread buckle and steps back. He then jumps the rotten tread but falls through the one above. Richard holds on with one hand, then by just one finger. Suddenly, he regains his grip with one hand, then the other.
Hold on! Pull yourself up!
You can do it!
I can't hang on! Richard, listen to me! I have researched your case. I know what is giving you the high anxiety. I have found the answer. Go back in your mind. Go back. You are a little baby. Your mother and your father are fighting. They're always fighting. They are fighting about you.
He flashes back to when he was a baby, although retaining his current appearance.
I hate this kid. He's making us prisoners. We're trapped in this house. We can never go out.
What do you want me to do? Get rid of him? Is that what you want? You want me to get rid of him?
Shut him up.
I can't take it.
He falls from his high chair and then is shown falling in the spinning spiral.
I understand now. It's not height I'm afraid of. It's parents.
Yeah. Now climb, you son of a bitch. Climb.
He hauls himself back onto the stairs.
Come on, Doc. You can do it.
He's almost
almost at the top.
Hurry, Richard, hurry!
Richard races up the stairs. Norton hangs Brisbane's body through the vaulted arch at the top of the tower. Brisbane begins to come around. Norton goes back to shut the trapdoor to the stairs. He then struggles to push Brisbane out. Richard opens the trapdoor and climbs up into the top of the tower. He grabs a block and tackle hanging from the roof.
Norton!
He hurls it at Norton, hitting him in the face. He then rushes across to Brisbane and drags him back in.
Mr. Brisbane. Are you all right?
Yes, I'm all right.
Now the stairs.
Thank you. You saved my life.
Oh, thank God it's over. Thank God it's all over.
Nurse Diesel, wearing a witch's cape and carrying a broom in her hand, flies in through an arch and straight out of one the other side. Richard and Brisbane watch as she plummets down the cliff, hurtling into the rocks below. Montague arrives.
Fins! Fins! I give up! I give up! I never liked her. I never really liked her. She never bathed. But I like you. I like you. I'll be on your side. I'll do anything you say. I'm good at that. And if I don't behave, you can beat the living crap out of me. I wouldn't mind.
The trapdoor hits Montague in the face.
Are you all right? We've seen a figure fall from the tower.
It was Nurse Diesel. She went right out
this window. Daddy! Daddy, I love you!
My baby! My baby! My boss!
Trophy! Brophy!
My Richard! My Richard!
Professor! Professor! You saved my life!
Yeah! Yeah!
You saved my life. Who are you?
Dad! Daddy! Dad! This is the man I'm going to marry.
Jeepers, Vicky!
Isn't he a dreamboat?
Oh!
They spin around in each other's arms. Then, in wedding dress, they drop onto a bed in the honeymoon suite of a hotel.
Oh, I absolutely love my new name. Mrs. Victoria Harpo Thorndike.
Mrs. Dr. Victoria Harpo Thorndike.
Oh, yes. Oh, doctor, I'm having this problem.
Problem, eh? Well, maybe we should examine the situation.
All right, last shot. Pull the camera back nice and slow.
We're going too fast. We're going to hit the wall.
The camera crew crash through the bedroom wall.
Uh-oh.
Oh, jeez. Now what are we going to do?
Never mind. Keep pulling back. Maybe nobody will notice.
It's very clear to me. I've got to give in. High anxiety. You win.
The closing shot zooms away from the Honeymoon City Hotel into a mist-filled moonlit sky. The end.